So the structure of this tutorial, I got several questions if this is like the same tutorial as the second part. The second part is continuation of the first part. So, and that's for all tutorial. So if you do this, you get stuck here for 3 hours. I'm going to first start with kind of a presentation style, introduce the terminology and the concepts, and after about 15 minutes, we start a hands-on part. For that, you probably got the email, and you have here the website to the link material to the material. And if you go to that site, it has a description of the tutorial, and it has prerequisites, and there are all the packages that you need to install. So if you haven't done it, I also heard that in the email the quotes were wrong, so you probably have to fix the quotes. I don't know how this probably should work from here, the copy. If you haven't done it, please run it, and then it will be hopefully done after the 15 minutes I stop talking so that we can start working on this. You might have noticed the technical note here. Unfortunately, RStudio is not working for all the packages I'm going to present. So I would recommend to use different R user interface, like R GUI, if you want to. I know it's probably for some people it will be a very dramatic change, but it might be a good thing, right, to try something new. However, the first part, this first hour and a half, everything will work in RStudio if you want to continue using it. The second half, I tell you where it's not working. Okay. So let's get started. Motivation. Everybody has its own motivation while people are here, but in general, we want to learn how to solve a given problem faster by utilizing more resources. So we have a problem like this, where we have one, say, worker with lots of work, and we want to change it to something like this, where we can do the work in parallel with many workers. So from serial processing to parallel processing. We always have to take into consideration the hardware, and the first thing you can think of probably is the CPU. So you do need multiple CPUs if you want to run things in parallel. And you can either have multiple CPUs in one computer, or you can have a cluster of single CPU computers or a mixture of that, right? Cluster of single or multiple computers. The other thing is memory, and there is a shared memory systems where you have CPUs that have access to the same memory, or you can have a distributed memory system where CPUs have access to its own memory. And of course, you can have a combination of those, which is a hybrid memory. So that's these are the physical, the hardware considerations. In terms of software, we distinguish two programming paradigms. One is implicit parallelism, and this is the case where a program does not need directives for parallelization from users. And the example of such implicit parallelism are parallel compilers like high performance Fortran, OpenMP, ScalaPack, or PBLAS. Basically, it's up to the person who write a code to give directives and then compiles it, and user who uses it doesn't need to care where the parallelism is. So, on opposite of that is explicit parallelism, and here we're talking about message passing libraries, and the message passing interface, MPI, is nowadays a standard there. And this is supported by various programming languages, including R. So in this case, we need to give explicit directives to the program what is going to run in parallel. And basically, today we are going to talk about the second bullet, the explicit parallelism, not about the first one. In terms of parallel programming models, this is, we talked about the hardware, the physical part, and now the programming models are its abstraction about the hardware and memory architecture. So there's the shared memory model, which would work well with the physical shared memory. And here, processes share a common address space, which they can then read and write to. An example is POSIX threads, which is a standard in Unix Linux world, or OpenNP, which is a multi-platform system. In R, there are various packages that use this shared memory model. Examples are R DSM, multicore that is now implemented in parallel for each, RCPP, RJava, and other packages that support OpenNP. Another model is message passing model. So instead of accessing the same memory address space, we are passing messages between the CPUs. And here, processes use their own memory, and communication is via is done via sending and receiving messages. And examples is the MPI, the message passing interface, which is de facto standard. In R, we have RMPI. A package that supports it, then PBD MPI and the PBDR packages. Master worker model, another model. Now notice that these models that I'm talking about are not mutually exclusive. Here we have a master that assigns jobs to a pool of workers, and the workers perform their tasks independently, and then master collects results. Now, this is suited for embarrassingly parallel applications. These are applications that have so many tasks that are independent of one another that it's embarrassing. And in R, we have a package Snow, which is now partly implemented in parallel, SnowFT, Snowfall for each. And another model is single program, multiple data, or SPMD. And here the emphasis is more on the data parallelism. And so we have one program and the processors are autonomous and there is no manager. And it's basically as the data is the focus there. In this workshop, we are going to talk about the master worker model part here that is using the message passing model. So these two. So you have a chance to leave if you didn't come for that part. In R, I didn't finish this one. The SPMD, there's a suite of packages, the PBDR, which is programming with big data R, it's the abbreviation. And there's going to be a tutorial on that at NextJSM in August in Baltimore. So if you're interested in that part. R Hadoop or DDR are another examples of this model. Any questions on that? Okay, let's talk a little bit about statistical simulations. So, R is a package for, language for statistical programming, and many statistical simulations have the following structure. First, we initialize some random number generator. This is a pseudocode. And then we do in some iteration from 1 to n, we run some function, and we assign the results to something, some object, and then we process the results. And if the my function here can be run independently, in that case, from this picture that shows the same structure that I have here in the pseudocode, where we run the functions and sequentially, we get something like this, where we have a situation where we have an initialization of the random number generator, and then we could actually run the my function independently or in parallel to one another, and then we process the results. In the master worker paradigm, sometimes this is called also master slave paradigm. I don't like that, so master worker paradigm. We deal with a cluster that consists of a master and a set of workers. And often we assigned one worker per physical node. Here, each worker is then responsible for one or more calls of this my function in the scenario I showed. And then master is responsible for sending workers everything they need and for collecting the results. So from this picture that I just showed you, we get something like this, where we initialize the random number generator, and the master creates a set of workers and sends data to them. And then we have here workers that perform maybe multiple times the my function, and then master collects the results and then processes it further. So we have here p workers, and we have n calls on my functions, my function, and often the p, the physical or the number of the work or number of workers, will be much smaller than n, because we are restricted by our hardware, right? So P and N, keep that in mind, because we will be using it in the exercises then. Number of workers, P, and number of tasks, N. Many packages in R work in this fashion. And one of the pioneers, SNOW stands for Simple Network of Workstation, was recently re-implemented in the parallel package, which is now in core, in R core. So, and that's what we are going to talk about today. A few words about random number generation. Many statistical applications involve random numbers. And examples of these are Markov chain, Monte Carlo's in Bayesian methods, bootstrapping, or other kinds of simulations. And there are important parameters of a random number generator, and that's a long period, and preferably we have something larger than 2^200. This means when the random numbers start to repeat, that's the period. And they also should have good structural or distributional properties in high dimension. So when you ask the generator to give you a set of numbers from specific distribution in high dimension, it should really be from that distribution, right? And these parameters should hold when used in distributed environments or when run in parallel. There's a good quality random number generator implemented by Pierre Lecuyer in 2002, and that one works with multiple independent streams, has period 2^291, and has streams that have seeds 2^127 apart. And so in this case, then parallel parts of user computation can run independent and reproducible streams, and altogether they will have the right properties as we expect from RNG. There's a direct interface in R to this generator. It's called R-Lecuyer or R-Stream, but recently, it was added to the R core, and so you can set it using RNG kind and set this name, and then you can use it that way. Okay, package parallel. That's what we are going to talk about, at least in the first half of the tutorial. It contains implementations of two packages. It has implementation of SNOW, which was developed by Luc Tiernier et al. And this package works for homogeneous as well as heterogeneous clusters and works on any operating system. And the other package is Multicore, developed by Simon Urbanek. And that one works for the Unix world, Mac, Unix, Linux OS, but not on Windows. It's actually using the shared memory model. And it's designed for multi-CPU cores, single computers with shared memory. That's what the main functions of this package shown now in parallel are mclapply, mcmapply, and mcmap. And here in this tutorial, we will focus on the SNOW part of parallel. The reason is also that it works, it's platform independent. And if you are interested in this part, you might just look up the functions and read about those. Okay, that's kind of concludes my first part, the sort of the theory part. Are there any questions? Okay, good. So in the rest of this half of the tutorial, we are going to talk about the parallel package. In the second half, we will talk about two user-contributed packages, NoFT and ForEach, and at the end, we will also look at how you can benchmark parallel programs, okay? So I have a team of helpers here. They were very generous to offer me here a help. They are all from Prague. And we have here Patricia, Adela, Jakub, and Luboš. So if anybody needs help while you're working, so make yourself visible and they will come and help you, okay? So if you could open R, as I said, in the first half, RStudio is okay, not in the second half. So I'm just using RGUI from the Mac. So you can, if you are using Windows, you can use the RGUI from Windows. And there was from the description of the tutorial at the very end, there is a link to material. So if you click on that, you'll get to the material that I'm going to talk about. The first few sections are about what I just was talking about, so we can skip those. And I should make it probably a larger font, I think. Maybe. Is this visible from the back? Yeah? Okay. Okay. As in any other work with R, the first thing you have to do is load your package. So we will do library parallel. The first functions that we can look at is detect cores. It will tell you how many cores or how many CPUs your computer have. So detect cores. So my computer says 8, that I have 8 cores. I know, though, that I don't. But what happens here is it counts hyper-threaded cores. So you can use the argument logical and set it to false. And it will only count the physical cores. So that's 4 for me, okay? And I will assign it to an object called P. If you remember the P, that's what I'm now doing. So I will, my P will be 4, the number of physical cores in my computer. You might have different one. How can you create a cluster? So what you do is you use the function make cluster. So we will assign it to an object called CL and do make cluster. And then the argument that you have to pass is how big the cluster should be. So I will say, okay, make one worker per node. So I will pass my P, my 4. So what is now CL? CL is a socket cluster with 4 nodes on localhost. And you can, what type is this? Oh, the CL. Type of CL is list. So the CL is a list of length 4. So we have one element per worker here. If you look at the first element of CL, it's a node. So node of cluster which has its PID. If you look at, for example, the pth element, it has different PID. So each of the worker has its ID. Type of this element is again a list. So we have a list of lists, each worker is a list, and names. If you want to look at what's in it, it has information about connection, which host it runs in, and its rank within the cluster. So that's our cluster, and if you want to stop that cluster, you do stop cluster CL. And if you look at now what CL1 is, it gives you error because the connection doesn't exist anymore. Okay? Start and stop a cluster. There are different types of clusters. Everything's good. Can you see here the bottom where I'm writing? Okay, what I need to do then in such a case, I need to... Okay, I have to... Oh, it's bringing all my windows here apart. Wait. Okay, so what I will do here is I will put it like this, and I will put this a little bit higher here, maybe. Okay. So I put this like this, and then I put this down. Okay. So is this height okay? Yeah? Okay, good. I have to see this though. All right. So start and stop cluster. There are different types of clusters, and by default we use the socket cluster, and that's where you put a type is PSOC. That's what we did by default. And in this case, workers start with empty environment. Basically, you start the worker, these four nodes that we had, each of them saw empty R environment, new R process. And that type, the socket cluster, is available on all platforms. There is a type fork where when the environment is forked, so all workers see the same environment as the master has. That one is not available on Windows. And other types of clusters are MPI, if you have the MPI interface installed and the RMPI package working. And another type of cluster is NWS, when you have the NWS package from Revolution Computing when it's installed. In this tutorial, since the socket cluster works on all platforms, we are going to use that, but there would be no difference in how you use it when you want to use any of the other types of cluster. So now when we know how to start and stop cluster, we can evaluate function on a cluster. So let's again start a cluster the same way we did before. CL make cluster. So I have the object CL. And the function that sends a function to all workers, it's called cluster apply. So we will just use very simple function, and we will say each worker should generate as many randomly, normally distributed random numbers as its position in the list. So first worker should generate one random number, second worker two, and so on. So what we will do, we will pass as argument, we will pass the cluster object, CL. And the second argument is a sequence that gets segmented and passed to the workers. And I tell you in a moment how. And the third argument is the function. So function is, and we are just passing our norm. So, and now the result is a list. First, that's the result that comes from the first worker. First worker got to generate one number, second, two, and so on. Fourth worker got to generate four numbers. So basically the sequence here, the second argument is, it got segmented that the first number got sent to first worker as the first argument of that function. So for example, the fourth worker got to evaluate this, right? R norm, four, it got four as first argument, and then mean and standard deviations are the defaults. So that's what happened on the worker side. If you also want to supply the additional arguments, then you can add it as in this function call. So you can say, I want the random numbers with mean is 10 and SD is 2. And you can see that the results are now generated using different parameters in the R norm, so with mean 10 and standard deviation 2. So these arguments get then passed to all workers the same. They don't get segmented, right? Okay, in this case, our P, number of workers, is equal to the N, number of tasks. Each worker just got one task to do. What if our N is larger than P? What happens then? So our example will be, we will generate random numbers. We will generate 20 times a set of 100,000 random numbers from a specific mean and standard deviation. So the result will be object res, and we do cluster apply. CL, first argument. So the second now, since it gets passed to the worker as the first argument, so we will now just repeat 100,000 20 times, right? So the length of this argument is giving the n. So that's how the n is defined, length of this argument, the sequence. And our function, let's just return the mean of the set of 100,000 so that we don't return 100,000 numbers, just the mean of that, okay? So we can just define it as function with an argument, I call it x, and give back mean of R norm. First argument is the x, and with mean is 5, and okay, just mean 5, standard deviation is the default. So what happens now? Length of res is 20, right? Instead of just one result from each worker, we now get result for each task, so 20. And if you look at the head of this, we got result for each task, and is it one number, which is the mean of the function, and all of them should be close to 5. So if you unlist it, mean of this sequence is 5, which is what you would expect. Okay, now I'm going to show you what actually happened behind the scenes on this plot. So this graph, okay, I have to stay here. This graph has the nodes on the y-axis, and in this case, I did it on my larger computer in the department, which had eight CPUs, and there's a time on the x-axis. The green bars is the time which the workers spent for tasks that they were sent to. And the red lines are messages that were sent to the workers. The 0-1 here is the master. And so you see that at the beginning, the master sends message to the first worker. The first worker starts to work here. Second starts to work, and so on. So first 8 tasks were sent. And the master then collects the results here when they are done. And then it says, oh, but I have 20 tasks, so I have to send more. So it sends another batch of 8. And then at the end said, oh, there are 4 left, so 4 more. And then it gets the results. So that's how it's solved when n is larger than p. Any question about, yeah? No, this is, I did this on a different computer. I did this on my departmental computer than I have now. Sorry about that. Okay, yeah. Yeah, everybody will have different. And later in this course, I show you how to create these plots. Yeah. Excuse me. Sorry, it was confusing, yeah.
Excuse me.
Yeah?
In the core number 6, how is this blue line that is from waiting for core number 6?
Ah, yeah. It's waiting. It's waiting until it can actually give back the results.
What is the reason of this waiting?
Because the master is not ready.
Oh.
And I show you in another plot exactly why is that. Okay, I will explain it. Good question. Yeah. Yeah?
Does it also decrease the usage of memory? Because we have it we break this process into several sections in time, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does. So, and it will then depend on your system how it's configured, but each process. So each of these nodes starts new R process. So this is like you would here start another R sessions, R consoles, and say okay, generate random numbers. So it would take memory away. Yeah. It does. Oh, sorry.
What's the function you use to get the usage plot?
What's what?
What's the function to get?
I'll show you later how to do that, okay? Yeah.
Yeah.
I was thinking that you will want to know how to do that. Okay, in this case the case I used here, I just wrote the whole function into the function call here. Usually, probably what you will, because you probably will have in your real application a little bit complicated situation, so you would want to write the function explicitly or separately from the function call. So, So usually the situation will be that you define the function, your function outside of that with some arguments. I say R, my function R, and give me mean, or another argument is mean and SD, choosing the defaults that from R norm. And that will return mean of R norm with arguments R, mean is mean, and SD is SD. And then your function, the cluster apply, you pass CL, 100,020 times, and the function will be just my function. And then you can pass. Do I have? Oh, thank you. Glad you somebody pays attention. And I will pass mean 5. So that's the same call. Okay, another. There, right? Yeah. The same call that I just used before, but with the function written explicitly outside of the function call. So when you want to initialize the workers, as I said, you will at the beginning, each worker is kind of an empty environment. It doesn't see anything what's on the master. So in a situation, for example, when workers should use some packages that you installed, you need to initialize the workers. Let's get an example where instead of generating random numbers, you want to generate random numbers from the discrete distribution from the package extra distr. So if you write it this way, if I define the... I will call it now my RD norm. And it will return RD norm. That's a function from the extra distr package with the same arguments as before. Mean is mean, SD is SD. And then you load the library on the master. So the process in your argui is actually the master. So library extra distr. So I'm loading that. And then I say cluster apply. CL. Now I'm going to generate just 20 random numbers 20 times. The function will be my RD norm. And I will just pass the standard deviation is 6, for example. Ah, you got an error. What does it say? 20 nodes produced error, could not find function RD norm because the workers don't know what's on the master, right? They have empty environment. So one solution would be that you put it into your function, into your my RD norm. So, and I will do it my RD norm 2. And then you would do first library extra distr. And then the same RD norm. R mean is mean, SD is SD. And then the same call of the cluster, because my RD norm 2. I'm calling my RD norm 2. Now it works because this got evaluated on each worker and it got the library loaded. However, with loading library, maybe it's not that inefficient, but if you have other things that you would want to put into it, this basically gets evaluated every time the function gets evaluated, right? So if this instead of library, it's some time-intensive task, it would be evaluated every time it would go into, which might not be needed. So, let's stop the cluster and load it again in order to clean the environment of the workers. Right now, the workers do know the extra distr library because we loaded it in this function. So let's stop the cluster and create it again. Stop cluster CL, and then CL is make cluster P. So my RD norm function, which we should have without loading library. And so the parallel package offers the function cluster eval queue, which you can call before you run the cluster apply. And so, okay, first let's do it now. Cluster eval queue for evaluating expression, you are passing the CL, and then you can pass any expression, any R expression into it. So in this case, we do library extra distra. Okay, and it returns from each node actually what libraries are loaded there, which is basically the base packages plus the extra distra. And then you can do the cluster apply function. I see that I use different call than I use different call in the material. Okay. 10,000 times. 10,000, I don't know, numbers 1,000 times. And I'm calling my RD norm as D6. So now it didn't fail because it first initialized the workers. So when you look at the histogram of analyst stress, okay, it did generate the random numbers from the discrete distribution. So basically, and I show you the picture again here, what happened, what we did with the cluster apply queue, we send it first to all workers some initialization expression, right? So first, that was initialized, and then each worker know about it for all evaluation of the tasks. Whereas in the first case, when we put it into the function, it would be evaluated every time with the green bar. So we did kind of more efficient solution. Any questions about this? Okay. You can use the same idea for sharing data. For example, you want the workers to know about some data set, and you don't want the data set to be passed every time you call a task, right? So you can pre-initialize the workers with those data. And you can use the cluster eval queue for that purpose. So we will use again the myRDNorm function that we already, okay, myRDNorm has these two arguments. So let's have an example where we actually don't want to pass the mean and standard deviation. In our case, it's just one number, it wouldn't matter, but you can imagine have a case when these would be big data sets, for example, right? And you don't want to pass it. So let's think of that as big data sets and take it out of the, I will just type it. Take it out of the arguments. So my RD norm will be only, it's a function of R, and we will get rid of the mean and SD as arguments. And then RD norm. R, but the still we want the worker know about the mean and SD. So we will use it in the function. So that's my RD norm function, only dependent on R and should know about mean and SD. So now we can use the cluster eval queue. You have passed the CL, the cluster, the library, extra distr, and then we say set mean to 5 and or 10 and SD to 5. There's oh yeah, I have to put it into curly braces because it's an expression. The cluster eval queue expects expression, so I'm putting it into curly braces so that it's one expression. And it actually returned the last command in the expression, so 5. So this was sent to workers. Now they are initialized with mean and SD. Everybody knows about these two values. And if we repeat the cluster eval, the cluster apply, what we did before, we will not pass the SD now. So if you do this, only the R will be filled, and it knows what to do, because each worker, when it gets the myrdnorm function, it also knows what the mean is and SD. So if you look at the histogram of the result, hist unless stress, you see that now the numbers are generated with mean is 10, right? We used different number in the past, so now it's 10, so it got the right value. So this method can be used, for example, when you need the workers to, I don't know, source a file or read big data sets and just initialize workers once with something before you send your tasks. Mm-hmm. This is my big data now here, yes. let's stop the cluster to clean the environment, the space, namespace, stop cluster, CL, and create it again. Make cluster P. Another way to pass this mean and SD is using cluster export. So we still have the same myrdnorm function, myrdnorm. And instead of passing it in the cluster eval queue, we let the master know about it. So in the master environment, we say mean is 20. And SD is 10. And then there is a function in the parallel package called cluster export. And that lets you to export any object that the master knows about to the worker. Okay, so you pass the CL, and in a vector, you pass a character vector where you name the objects that the master knows about. So in this case, mean and SD. So whatever the master, whatever values they have on the master environment, they are sent to workers now. And then cluster eval queue would be only the loading the library. And then the cluster apply as before. And if you look at now the histogram, we had in the previous call, we had mean 10, but now we have 20. So it was correctly exported from the master to the worker. So this is a way how to share parts of the environment from master to workers. Okay. Now when the worker has some data loaded. Yeah, there's a question. Yeah, it depends then. You load it. It depends how long it takes, I suppose, and how big the data is and how long if you send it, how long that would take. It kind of depends from the situation. There are also ways to split the data set to the workers on the master side and just send the partition of the data, which we are going to just talk now about, just the part that they need. I suppose you just need to see what's there. There are various options how you can do it, and you can, like, depending on your application, see what's best. So one way of letting worker know which part on the data set they should work on is that each worker has the whole data set, and then they just know on which part of the data they should work, right? So in this example, we have a set of AR1 parameters, and it's a data frame, and I'm just going to here copy it. I'm not going to type it now. So we have a data frame, AR1 parse, and I look at head. It's the parameters of AR1 process. So you can see it has three columns, mu, rho, and sigma. And it has n rows, dimension. It has n rows. And what we want to do now, we are going to load this to the worker. Each worker will know about the whole data set, and each worker is supposed to generate an AR1 process from one row of this data set, okay, with these parameters. So that's our task now. 100 random, 100 realization of the AR1 process with these parameters. So each worker needs to know from which row actually to take the data. So the function that we are going to write, and I'm going to now copy it again and explain it just for the sake of time. My AR1 function. And basically what this is doing is the first argument of that function, which is the part that gets segmented from the cluster call, is ID. So each task knows which ID, which row to take, and there is an additional argument, which is the starting point of the AR1 process. So the parameters are taken from the data set, and it's just the ID's row, right? And then it knows which parameters to take, and then it can generate the AR1 process with those parameters, and we are going to generate 100 realization of that AR1 process. And then what you do is you just export this data set, so cluster export, CL, and we want the worker to know the data frame AR1 parse. So each worker knows about it now, and the cluster apply call. We are passing CL. So the sequence here now, what we are going to segment is 1 to n. So first call gets 1, 2, and so on, so that the ID, this is basically the ID, right? 1 to n. And function is then my AR1. And let's put the T, the starting point, at 1. Okay, that's it. And so length res is 1,000, because 1,000 tasks, we evaluate 1,000 tasks, and length of the first element is 100. So each element of these 1,000 element return 100 realization of its own AR1 process. We can now, so this is, the result of cluster apply is always a list, but you can combine it into different objects. For example, if you want to create matrix from these, you can do resmat is do.call R bind res. So it will apply the R bind function on the list, and so dimension of this is 1,000 times 100, what you would want, right? No, not here, no. Okay, so this is an example that might be useful. In this case, each task was just take a specific row of that data frame. You can imagine if you want the worker to work on a whole segment of the data frame, you could modify it slightly to do that, right? Here. Any questions? Yeah.
Just in terms of memory, when you send each data frame, it means that you need four types of memory?
Yes, you do in this case. And there are maybe better solutions than this, and then I'm going to talk about some now in the next section. So, yeah, probably you wouldn't want huge data sets to have to load to each worker, yeah. The parallel package has few higher level functions that are implemented on top of these functions that I talked about and makes things a little bit maybe simpler. And these functions are parallel versions of lapply, sapply, and apply, and they are called parallelapply, parsapply, and parapply. And they all use the cluster apply underneath of them. So, for example, there's a if you want to sum rows of a matrix that results in a vector, not a list, you can use parapply. So you would do parapply CL. And then you would have a matrix, for example, from 1 to 2,000. You would say n row is 20. Now, as in the case of apply functions, you say on which dimension I'm applying it, so on the first dimension, and the function will be sum. So this gives us sum of rows of the over matrix. Now, this is a very trivial example, and you probably wouldn't want to use the parallel version of such a simple computation, because it probably wouldn't really be faster than sequential version. And in the last part of this tutorial, in the benchmarking part, I'm going to show you how you can actually assess when it makes sense and when it doesn't to run computations parallel. So the second bullet here is, in this section, is the example we just had with the AR1 process. Instead of that each worker knows about the whole data sets and knows the row in which on which to work, you can just pass the rows to the worker so that each worker knows about the rows, just as we discussed. So I'm going to slightly modify the function. I'm going to copy this, my AR1 row, and explain it. So in this case, instead of ID, the first argument are the parameters, and then we are expecting that the parameters will be a vector of size 3, so one row of the data frame which will be passed, and then generate the AR1 process with that. And then you use the function parapply, so res is parapply, passing the CL. And the second argument, instead of a sequence, as we did with cluster apply, you are passing the data frame. So the data frame gets segmented now. So AR1 parse. dimension. First, you want to segment it by rows, and the function my error one row, and then the t starting point of the process. So that run, and the dimension of this object is 100 times 1,000, so you might need to transform it, but transpose it, but it's basically already put it into a matrix as a result. So this is a way how you can just pass segments of data sets to your function. So far we only segmented one object that was segmented and passed to the workers. If you want to segment more objects, you can use the function cluster map, and it's analogous to mapply and map in R. So say we want to generate random numbers, but each worker should use different mean, not just different number, but also different mean. So we want to segment the mean as well. So my R norm will be a function with argument R, mean, and SD is 1. And it returns R norm with R and mean is mean. And SD is SD. Let's set N to 100. And so we will use cluster map, passing CL as the first argument. Now the function is second argument, so my R norm. And now you can pass any arguments that are going to be segmented. So for R, we have to name it also, pass 1 to N, and mean, you can pass different means. So I now chose to put this sequence, n to 1 times 10, and SD is 2. So SD will be the same, mean and R will be different. So the length of the result is then 100. That's our N here. And head of the rest looks like this. So first task got R is 1 and mean is 1,000. And then it goes, right? Each of the tasks gets more R and different mean. So, and if you, so you can put as many arguments you want to segment as you want, and if you don't, you can just put a single number, and it will just be passed as a single number. The last command, if you want to, for example, plot mean of each of those results, you can use the par sapply to do it in parallel. Par sapply, CL would be the first argument, result, you are passing a list, and function mean. So basically this gives you back the mean of all these processes, all these tasks that we run, and it was linear and it is correct. It was giving back this, right, this thing. So okay. Any questions so far?
Is there a way to pass something to workers in between the process?
When they are working?
Yeah. I would just initialize like something 1,000 times, and then the fifth 100, I would pass something.
No, not with parallel.
Mm-hmm. Could you repeat the question? Because
Oh, if it's possibility to pass to the workers something in the middle of the computation when they work, no, not in parallel package. And now I'm kind of thinking, not sure that I know of any, maybe some of the backends for each, I don't know.
Maybe it's weird, but is it possible that we send a different function to different workers?
No, not with parallel.
Because, I mean, that's some worker doing the same function, that's some worker doing the other.
Yeah, I know what you mean, no. No. Mm-hmm. Each of the so if you use the cluster apply queue, that's sending cluster eval queue, that's sending only to each worker. So you initialize like the nodes if you want. So yeah. And anything you put into your function will be run 100,000 times. But if you you know, you can use it before, as I showed there. Okay, so then we can talk about load balancing. So you can consider a situation, you can imagine a situation when each task takes very different amount of time to run. And this can be due to, for example, input parameters in the function, or when you want something to converge and it doesn't, or when your nodes are not are heterogeneous and are not the same. Some specification, maybe one are slower than some are slower than others. So I want to show you how the cluster apply actually works, what happens exactly. And we will use now I'll show you how to do the plot that I showed you, and for that we will use the function snow.time. The snow.time is not available in the parallel package. In the re-implementation, it wasn't converted over to the parallel, but it exists in the snow, so we are going to take it from the snow package. For that, we will load the library snow. So you should have something, you should see something like this, and what it's telling you, that now we are masking some of the calls from snow, we are masking the implementations in parallel. This is on purpose because the parallel package doesn't have the ability to monitor the time as we saw in the plot. I'm not sure if the authors of parallel would like me to do this, but let's do it for a little bit and then we detach it again. So we will define a function. Maybe we already have it, rnmean, did we already? No, okay, so we will define a function that returns a mean of r norm function, so rnmean. So function rmean is 0, sd is 1. And this function will return a mean of R norm. R mean is mean, SD is SD. Okay. Now our N will be 30. And now I'm going to create a sequence that will trigger very different load of the tasks, okay? You might just, so I will now set the seed to 50, and then I will just copy this sequence here. And what this sequence is doing basically, it samples from some exponentials and exponential numbers. If you look at head of our sequence, R sequence. So this is the random number of random numbers that we want to generate on different workers, and the idea is here they are very different from another so that the load is different, okay, for the workers. That's just a little trick here. So the function, as I said, that measures the time is called snow.time, and we will wrap it around the cluster apply function. So cTime will be snow.time. And we do the cluster apply. CL, our sequence will be r.sequence. And function is rnMean. Okay, that run. And if I plot it, I plot the C time now. Plot C time. It does similar plot that we saw on the page here. The times, as you can see, is now very different for different tasks. Now, I'm going to explain it on the picture that I have. Where is it? That's a different page. That I have here. Again, I run it on different cluster, different computer, but the same function, the same command. So what happened when we run the cluster apply function? So basically, again, the master generates the nodes, and the workers start to work. But look what happens. The first one now takes much longer maybe than the second and third one, but the master waits first for the first worker to finish, gets the results, and then collects the results from the others. So the other have to wait until actually the first one is finished. And then next load again, right? It's basically the master collects the results in the same order as it sends the data. So it sends the data 1, 2, 3, 4, and then it also collects in the same order. So as you can see, this might be also extreme here in the third run that it waits for this, whereas all these are already waiting. So all these empty space or the blue lines is waiting times. That is pretty inefficient. So Parallel has a solution for that, and that's a function cluster apply LB, LB for load balancing. So, and it's the same usage, everything, you just put LB for the function call. So I'm going to now, the same function, snow time cluster apply LB. And plot C time. Ah, now it looks different, right? Much less of the waiting time than before. And in the material here, on the same cluster as above, as you can see, the master now, here it takes actually first the results from the second worker. From this one. It's from the third, and then immediately sends more more work to them. So you have much less of the waiting time. And in fact, if you look at the scale on the x-axis, this is here 0.3 seconds, and here is more than twice as much in this case. So cluster apply LB can be helpful if you have tasks that can take different amount of time. Okay, let's unload the snow package. It is a detach package snow. We will unmask the functions that we used. So that any time we now will use cluster apply and cluster apply LB, it will be taken from the Parallel package, not from the Snow package. Yep.
Is there any reason you will use cluster apply instead of cluster apply LB?
For this purpose, mostly.
Well, in general, if it works faster?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
But is there any case you won't use it?
Oh, you will not use it? Oh, that's what was your question. Oh, okay. Okay. Yes. Oh, yes. And there is, and it's reproducibility, and I'm going to talk about right now, random numbers and reproducibility. As I said, so detach the snow so that we use, again, the parallel versions. I suppose you would only load the snow if you want to measure for these plots. Otherwise, you don't need to. All right, I talked in the introduction a little bit about random numbers, sorry. Results out of the box, if you just use the standard R random number generators, they are not reproducible. So for example, if you set a seed, set.seed1, and then I will unlist the result and do cluster apply, CL, and I will generate 5 random numbers on P workers, R norm. So I have this, and then I do this again, set seed, and we have different numbers, right, every time. So, and the reason is because the workers don't know that the generator was initialized. There's a quick and dirty solution to this, and that's when you can basically set a seed on the workers. And this is what you see here. It's one idea that you would set seed on the master, and then you would do cluster apply. I suppose you could do it also with cluster eval Q. You basically sample from 1 to very large number. I don't know what this is, 10,000 million or something. P times, and the function you are passing to the workers is set seed. So this function basically evaluates set seed with these seeds on the workers, and since you did set seed on a master, this should be reproducible then. So if I again do the R norm, and I do this whole thing again, set seed on workers and R norm, then they are the same. However, this is kind of a bad solution, because the resulting random numbers in total, I talked about the properties of random number generators, you don't have them here guaranteed, right? You can do it for some, it's actually not the correct way. So the correct way is to use a random number generator that was developed for this parallel environment, like the Lecuyer generator. And I put here in the material here links, if you are interested more to read about it, to actually his papers and Lecuyer's papers. And so let's look what we have on the workers, what kind of generators they have set. So if we do cluster eval Q, CL, and then we say, give me RNG kind on each node. RNG kind. Oh, yeah, thank you. There. So each worker, because it starts with the empty environment, it has the same default RNG kind of like the master, which is Mersenne Twister. So what you do is there is a function in parallel called cluster set RNG stream. So let's put seed is 1, and then you do cluster set RNG stream CL seed. If you do again the cluster evil RNG kind, then you see that it was changed on the workers to Lequier generator. So now each of the workers have its own independent, very long stream of random numbers that together combine give you the right properties of a random number generator. So if I now generate random numbers on the workers and I will bind them together, I do call rbind cluster eval q. I could have done this with cluster apply as well. Norm 5, which you get this. And if I set the seed again and run this again, I get the same random numbers with a good generator. Okay. So the next loop that you see here, what I'm doing here, I'm running 10 times, I set a seed, and then I run the cluster apply on this sequence, uneven sequence that we just used with the RN mean function. So let's look what this is doing. And this is comparing reproducibility of cluster apply and cluster apply LB. So 10 times I'm just setting the seed and resetting the seed and generating random numbers. And as you can see, every iteration, the seeds are the same with cluster apply. Now we are going to do exactly the same, except we will use cluster apply LB. That's the second part of this loop. We are setting the seed, and what happens? The results are not reproducible. Why is that? The reason is, can somebody think why is that? Exactly, yes. So there's a picture that you can see here. Basically, each worker gets assigned a seed, gets a stream of random numbers, and the color represent here the stream. And with cluster apply LB, the assignment to workers is not deterministic, right? It depends always on the load of that task, so it doesn't, you don't know which stream is going to be used for that workers with cluster apply LB. So that goes back to the question, why wouldn't you use cluster apply LB? So that might be the reason. Well, that can be, that can be hardware dependent also, right? There are lots of aspects that can happen. It's not deterministic. The same happens, also when you use cluster of different sizes. So if I set this, I just copy it, and we will have a break in a few minutes. So if I just set the seed and run our norm on the workers, in my case I have four nodes, right? So you get this. But how about when you change the cluster? I'm going to create a cluster of size 3. So make cluster 3, it's CL3 object, and I'm going to just do cluster set RNG stream CL3 seed. So setting seed on my 3 node cluster and unlist cluster apply CL3 generating 1 random numbers 10 times R norm. Different numbers, right? Even though we are using cluster apply, but we are using different size, and this goes back to this. Now we have just three workers, three streams, so now the tasks are actually, again, generated on different streams than before. So as a result, results are only reproducible when evaluated on a cluster of the same size and using cluster apply. Any questions about this? Okay, let's clean the two clusters, top cluster CL, and stop cluster CL3. And we can go into break. After the break, we will learn about two packages that deal with this problem of reproducibility and also simplify the work with the parallel package. And we will talk about benchmarking as well. Okay?